You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. A week from tomorrow, Donald Trump will be inaugurated the 45th president of the United States. And with five children, his will be the largest family to take residence in the White House since George H.W. Bush in 1989. But President Bush and several of his family already had years of political experience before taking office. How is the Trump family adjusting to a rapid switch from business to politics? In a pair of Vanity Fair articles on our new first family, William D. Cohen and Sarah Ellison look at the lives of Donald Trump's two older sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, and daughters Ivanka and Tiffany. Sarah Ellison's article, Inside Ivanka and Tiffany Trump's Complicated Sister Act, and William Cohen's Can Donald Jr. and Eric Trump Really Run the Family Business? They're both linked on our show page, and I'm pleased to welcome both Sarah Ellison and Bill Cohen to our show again. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so as someone who lives in Washington and has gone through a presidential transition from George W. Bush to Barack Obama, now Barack Obama to Donald Trump, the one question, the conventional wisdom in Washington right now is that Melania Trump, President-elect Trump's wife, they've already announced that she is staying in New York City, will not be moving to Washington until their son Barron finishes school at the end of the year. But the conventional wisdom in Washington is she's never moving to Washington and Barron is never coming to Washington. Is that conventional wisdom actually truth from what you know in the reporting that you've done?
Well, I would say that from my reporting, it doesn't really matter that much if Melania is in Washington or not, because Ivanka Trump has already set herself up to very much take on effectively what the First Lady's sort of position is normally. It's a very unconventional family in a lot of different ways, and I think this is one of the first ways that people who are looking for those signals in Washington, Ivanka has essentially basically set herself up to be the First Lady.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing I would add is that Melania doesn't seem much interested in the role. She has really been behind the scenes throughout the transition period and even throughout the campaign. And you know, we saw her briefly, obviously, at the convention. We saw her on the 60 Minutes interview after the election. So I think, to Sarah's point, I don't think Donald seems to care whether Melania shows up, and I think Ivanka seems poised and ready to assume that role.
So let's talk about the Trump children, Donald Jr. and Eric. They were featured prominently yesterday, rhetorically, I mean, in the press conference, where it was talked basically they are going to be running the business for their father while he is doing the business of the country as president of the United States. I mean, I know they've been working with their father, but are they up to the enormous task of running their father's business just as an enterprise, but also doing so when their father will be the leader of the free world?
So, I mean, we're in this nether world of what Donald Trump wants us to believe and think about how his business is going to be run, including perhaps stacks of manila folders with, as some are saying now on Twitter, blank pages in them that were supposed to represent trust agreements that, of course, we'll never see, so it doesn't matter if they're blank pages in them or not. In other words, that could have been one major, a big prop. I think there's, both Donald Trump Jr. and Eric have literally and figuratively been apprentices to their father. The headline of the Vanity Fair story in the magazine, as opposed to the one online, is "Send in the clones." I very much think they are chips off the old block, both in their business behavior and in their online social media profiles. They clearly are very much of the I don't really care what people think of us, a school. They're not politically correct. Obviously, you do not pose with pictures of endangered species that you have just killed and place them in social media if you care about what people think of you.
And I would say that these guys, though, have really drawn the short straws in the family, both Donald Jr. and Eric, because the way that we just heard yesterday that Donald Trump is setting up his resolution of this conflict of interest question is really more opening a can of worms. He's essentially sort of not divesting his assets. He's going to still own those. He's giving his two sons the ability to run the company, and it's just going to invite question after question after question that they will be left holding the bag for, I think. I mean,
well, I agree with you, but I also don't think that Donald Trump is relinquishing his control over these businesses. In the reporting of the article, one Wall Street guy said to me, they may set it up like this, but I can assure you that Donald Trump is going to continue to run his business. As his own lawyer said yesterday, he can't unknow that he owns Trump Tower. And they are his apprentices. They are his DNA. They know exactly what he wants and what he doesn't want. And he is not selling anything. He is not divesting anything. There's going to be a lot of unspoken communication here.
Or maybe there will be spoken communication, because as we know, Donald Trump has no problem picking up the phone, going onto Twitter.
He doesn't use email. There'll never be an email.
Right.
And, but there's no way to there's no way for us as the American people to know what kind of conversation goes on at the dinner table, or whether there's going to be somebody picking up the phone. I mean, he did open his press conference yesterday basically by saying, I don't have to do any of this. So this is essentially, I'm doing a favor to the American people by even putting these manila folders on the table and sort of making a show of it. But the family is very much in contact with one another. I mean, they do pride themselves on that, on how much they are able to talk to their father. And so this is really going to be a test for them.
The only hope could be if he becomes even more Nixonian than we think he already is, and he starts taping lots of things and has conversations that between him and his family that get taped and somehow find their way into the public sphere.
You mean the only hope for knowing about
happens here.
I'm Jonathan Capehart in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Sarah Ellison and William D. Cohen about their two articles about the Trump children for Vanity Fair. One more thing on the theatrics of yesterday in that press conference. The thing that I came away with is in presidencies past, the person who becomes president of the United States makes a great show of personal sacrifice in order to sit in the highest office in the land, to sit in the Oval Office. They put their things in blind trust. They sell things off. They make a show of saying, I am working for you, the American people. I have no other interest but you. And yesterday, to my mind, in that press conference, there was no sacrifice at all. I think we were just talking about the fact that, you know, there's no doubt that Bill, that Wall Street folks are saying there's no question that he is still going to be in control of those companies. And so where's the sacrifice?
Well, his own lawyer said he can't be expected to tear down the company that he built. I can't remember exactly what her
words
were.
Right, he can't unknow what he already knows.
One, he can't. There is no such thing as a blind trust when the name Trump is on every property that you own. But also, I think she made the case on a more sort of emotional level that he can't be expected to divest himself of these things, because it would be a fire sale, it would be at a great disadvantage to the business, which is totally unproven. We don't really know if that was the case, but I do think that the idea that the expectation is certainly not. I mean, he's rewriting the rules in so many different ways, but this is one where he is sort of saying, you've never had such a successful businessman be your president. Like, I've got to, you got to let me be let Trump be Trump, I guess, is the message.
I mean, it's not like he's the CEO of a publicly traded company. This is a private his companies or his entities, they're right. private enterprises. And if it's a fire sale, it's a fire sale. I mean, the tradition was the president of the United States. It's a you sacrifice in order to be in such a powerful job. But let's stop talking about him, because we're supposed to be here to talk about the kids. We talked a little bit about Donald Jr. and Eric and sort of their questionable ways, such as going on that safari, shooting and killing an endangered species, and holding it up before the cameras and smiling with the guns hanging from their arms. Ivanka has the reputation of being not only the smart Trump, and that's my own interpretation here, but also the favorite Trump child. Is that correct? And is that the way the president-elect views his daughter?
Yes. I think that when I was doing the reporting for this story, you only have to look at, you know, a 60 Minutes interview or other interviews that the children have all done together, Donald Jr., Eric, Ivanka, and Tiffany, who's their half-sister, who was who's
and I want to talk about her after the break, but sure. Keep going on Ivanka.
They all say when asked who's your father's favorite, they all kind of point to Ivanka, and she laughs graciously and says, well, everyone has their own relationship. But I think there's no question that the two of them have a special relationship. She is identified by the kids as being the favorite. And you see her being singled out in this arrangement where she's the one who's moving to Washington. He's the one who has said, the presidency is so much more important than my business. You know, he says that. So which one is moving with him to Washington? It's Ivanka.
Well, right. I mean, that's the one signal that I have that the president-elect Trump actually takes the presidency seriously. It's that Ivanka is moving to Washington to be there with him.
Well, I would actually flip it on its head a little bit.
Oh, really?
I think I think he does take the presidency seriously, but I think if you're looking at who's the power behind this throne, I think if you look at Donald Trump's ambition and you look at what he wants to do for himself, just look one step further, look at Ivanka and the stepping stone that she must see this for herself. I think that she is somebody who is really she's moving down there for her father. She's moving down there for herself.
So it's not that she's the power behind the throne. She is. She sees this as an unbelievable stepping stone.
Yes.
Well, to the first question you had about Melania being the first lady. I mean, it's clear to me that the most powerful couple in the Trump administration now is Ivanka and Jared Kushner. They are the most powerful. They are the first couple, even more. I mean, because if Melania doesn't show, right, and Ivanka is, the de facto first lady, and certainly we know that Jared is going to be around the corner from the Oval Office, I mean, that's quite a lot of power, more power than we've seen in a long time consolidated into two people, two young people.
Right.
I think that Ivanka is also an incredibly useful and is a wonderful sort of person to have out in front of this family. I mean, she is, I said in the article that her taste is so understated and she seems so respectable compared to the kind of more flamboyant kind of out there statements that her father makes. She measures every word. She made the point of announcing a day before her father's press conference that she was taking a leave of absence from her, not just from the Trump organization, but also from her Ivanka Trump brand. Now, leave of absence means something that I don't know. I don't know exactly what that means.
She's not divest.
We don't know what that means. But she did that a day ahead of time. Jared announced that he was going to be divesting some of his assets. Again, we don't know exactly what or exactly how. I mean, all of this is just we have to take them on their word a bit. But I do think that she is, in some ways, creating a little bit of daylight between her and her father in a way to protect herself. But it's very useful because people look at her, they think, well, he can't be a misogynist because he's so good to his daughter. Mm-hmm. He can't be an anti-Semite.
His son-in-law
is an Orthodox Jew, and his daughter has converted to Judaism. So, I mean, I think that they are actually, it's a very interesting dynamic to see what role they play.
I'm speaking with William D. Cohen and Sarah Ellison from Vanity Fair. We are discussing their reporting on the Trump children. We're going to talk about Jared more fully and Tiffany when we come back from this break. I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We'll be back after the break. Jonathan Capehart in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with William D. Cohen and Sarah Ellison from Vanity Fair about their two big articles about the Trump children. We've talked about Donald Jr. We've talked about Eric. We were talking about Ivanka before the break. Now it's time to talk to a Trump kid and a Trump son-in-law who are figuring in different ways prominently in this story. Tiffany Trump, who on Saturday Night Live kind of lampoons her as like the Jan Brady of the Trump family. What really is her relationship with the Trump children? By that I mean Ivana's children, Donald Jr., Eric, and Ivanka.
Well, she's certainly, I mean, first of all, she is 12 years younger than Ivanka Trump. Ivanka is 12 years younger than Melania Trump. So they have a relationship that is almost, it's not like a mother-daughter relationship, but she's old. She's enough younger than her Ivana Trump children, you know, than Ivanka, Donald Jr., and Eric, that for much of their childhood, one, she was on a different coast. She grew up in California, and they were in New York. But she was so much younger than they were that it was only after, you know, they knew her as like baby, you know, baby Tiffany. But I think her relationship with Ivanka really blossomed during the campaign, when Ivanka sort of brought her into the fold and campaigned with her, and they sort of bonded over. I mean, they've known each other now, obviously, for a long time, but that was really a role that she helped kind of bring Tiffany into the family in that way.
It's interesting that you talk about Tiffany and Ivanka as if they were two people who were thrust together and just through chemistry became friends, when they're blood relatives. I mean, did they have any kind of relationship growing up? It doesn't sound like they did. Not that I would expect that they would.
Well, they
not
had,
just because of geography.
They got together on holidays and things like that. I mean, I do think that he had them. He had his children. You know, Tiffany would come in, and I mean, Ivanka was in Tiffany's. Tiffany was in Ivanka's wedding. I mean, they did show up for certain things. But I think what's always been clear to me about Tiffany's relationship with Ivanka and with the other children is that it's always been through their father. So that it's not like that they have a real independent relationship of their own. You have to remember that when Ivanka and Donald were getting a divorce and Donald Trump was having an affair with Marla Maples, it was this traumatic chapter in the older children's lives. I mean, they were completely mortified that he was on the cover of the New York Post.
New York Post, like almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's this myth that the Trumps have been very good at fomenting about how Donald Trump Sr. is a very good father, right? And the fact of the matter is he divorced the three children's, older children's mother in a very public and flamboyant way. Donald Jr. stopped talking to his father for over a year. They were basically raised by Ivana's parents, and that's where this whole hunting thing comes in, this big game hunting, because they were from Czechoslovakia and they would spend the summers there.
The grandfather was a big hunter.
Donald Sr. doesn't care about hunting. You know, he's not a hunter. And then there's another instance after Donald Jr. graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, when he became a ski bum out in Aspen for 18 months, where again he stopped talking to his father. So, I mean, the whole transformation of Donald Jr. and how he came back into the family fold is sort of one of those lingering mysteries. But this idea that Donald Trump is this great father and doting father, I think there's definitely holes in that.
Well, it's interesting because whenever any of the children in interviews have talked about their father, they say things like, he would always answer my phone calls when I called the office. None of them actually lived with him after a certain point because Marla Maples moved to California, but even his children from his first marriage lived on a different floor than he did. So the idea that, you know, he was so accessible on the phone is I think a telling kind of statement to make about your own father.
Yeah, I mean, at the convention in Cleveland, listening to their speeches, particularly Tiffany's and Ivanka's, they talked lovingly, and even Donald Jr. and Eric, they talked lovingly about their father, but the interactions that they described were so sort of cold and from a distance. You know, he always returned my calls. He wrote a note on a piece of paper.
Well, again, I mean, to that point, the anecdote that I tell in the story about when Donald came to University of Pennsylvania to pick up Donald Jr. to go to a Yankees game, and Donald is dressed in a suit and his usual uniform, and Donald Jr. was dressed in a Yankees jersey, and Donald supposedly, reportedly, anecdotally, slapped him, resulting in him collapsing onto the floor and telling him, you know you're not supposed to wear that Yankees jersey. You know, you're supposed to wear a coat and tie, and you, I'm going to be down waiting in the car. You come down, and when you've changed, you come down into the car, and we'll go to the game together. That's shocking and galling. Yeah. That is not a loving, close relationship.
So then let's talk about a relationship that does appear to be close and dare say loving, and that is the am I right to say, is it right to think of Jared Kushner as the son Trump really always wanted?
I think it's a fair point because I don't think he's particularly close to either Eric or Donald Jr. It's all of these things we've been talking about, very sort of stiff and at a distance. And basically, you know, Ivana has said, I'll raise these kids to their 21, and then I'm turning them over to you. And so it's not exactly, this is not, I don't think, a loving, warm relationship. I think he's quite infatuated with Jared Kushner.
I think it's a less complicated relationship, right? Like, Jared has his own history with his own father, which is very, in its way, troubled, and that has sordid elements to it. But I think that sometimes you can see this in powerful father figures, that their own children expect a little bit more from them than other people do, and they have better relationships with people who kind of work for them or people who are the relationship is less complicated. Jared knows how to, he sort of is friends with older men who are much older than he is. He is very comfortable he's friends with Rupert Murdoch. He's friends with Ron Perlman. I mean, these are people who are twice, three times his age. You know, it's like a very different relationship. And I think that one of the things that kept coming out in my reporting about Jared is that he doesn't have a policy position where he's going to disagree with Donald Trump. He is there for family loyalty. And he also sees it as a stepping stone for himself. I had a friend of his describe to me, who wouldn't take the chance to take the opportunity to be involved in advising a presidential candidate? This was during the campaign. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting that you would see it as like a resume booster in a certain way.
And especially that campaign, which, you know, as an opinion writer, I have been very out there and calling Donald Trump's presidential campaign one that was racist, xenophobic, misogynistic, mm-hmm. all of those bad things. And yet, despite that, all the children and correct me if I'm wrong, but in New York City, Ivanka and Jared were not seen as ideologues, particularly political, and certainly if they were seen politically, they weren't seen as conservatives, and certainly not seen as people with any kind of biases or bigotries. No.
Well, this is the reason that Ivanka and Jared come under so much criticism, because they essentially helped whitewash his campaign. Ivanka stood there and vouched for her father as a woman, as a powerful woman, as a working woman. And Jared is very active in the Jewish community, and he came out very publicly during the campaign and defended his father-in-law against, when there were Jewish stars being tweeted
on Hillary's picture.
Exactly.
And Ivanka had a very important interstitial role, especially with the mainstream media, spinning her father's message on a regular basis, interacting with reporters, deflecting all of the negative sentiments that Donald Trump brought onto himself, including going so far as to sort of three quarters through an interview saying, oh, by the way, this is all off the record,
right.
and you know, sort of making reporters pull their hair out at the same time that she's spinning madly. Mm-hmm. So he obviously trusted her very much more than the other children, and even Jared, to have this very important interstitial mm-hmm. role.
And, you know, in the short time that we've talked about the Trump family and the Trump children, it is clear, even despite the complicated relationships, family is very important. I think, mm-hmm. I think Sarah, in your story, you have Ivanka saying, "We don't want people around who aren't trustworthy. We are a family. It's about trust." What prompted her to say that? And is that the way to think about the incoming Trump administration? Is it a guidepost?
Well, I think it's very clear that there were areas where people certainly expected Ivanka to have a different position and a different opinion than her father. And you never saw her declare that, right? I mean, you never saw her after the Billy Bush tape came out and people expected there to be, you know, she would speak in favor of her father or not at all. And I think that's where that statement comes, you know, that's what she's speaking to at that point, where she sort of says, we don't want people around who are going to publicly disagree with him. We're here to support him. And I think that's what she was talking about.
So the silences are as important as what she says.
I think so. If you want to analyze her, you can see when she's saying nothing. She could very, very easily be privately disagreeing with him, but will never let the family fractures be public.
And then if you just look at the cabinet appointments, they talked about we're going to get the best and the brightest, you know. And really what he's done is he's gotten the people who are most loyal to him mm-hmm. earliest on. And by the way, that's not a long period of time. We're not talking about long-term loyalty here. We're talking about relatively short-term loyalty. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve Mnuchin, you know, got onto the campaign bus in April. Donald had sued him over the Chicago Tower a few years before. So loyalty is a very fluid thing, but important.
But here's the interesting thing. Where's Rudy Giuliani? Where's Chris Christie? Although I understand why Chris Christie's not in the orbit. But if loyalty is so big, why are the people who were seen as the most loyal nowhere in the picture?
Well, Rudy Giuliani, it's just come out, is going to advise him on cybersecurity. So it was maybe a step too far to make him Secretary of State.
Yeah. Well, although I've heard that he is going to be Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because he's not of the right age. But I have heard that.
Wow.
See,
but then again,
it all comes around.
But then again, Dr. Ben Carson, he's the nominee for Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And Sarah.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that some of these questions about if you talk about Chris Christie, and you know, there's an interesting side story to that, which is that Jared Kushner and Chris Christie have a history because Chris Christie was the prosecutor on Jared Kushner's father's case.
The more interesting thing is that why Chris Christie ever thought he would have a spot in the Trump administration, knowing that Jared Kushner was always going to be there talking about what he did to his father.
Maybe Governor Christie thought he could roll the kid. And as we're seeing,
that's the more interesting. I want you to get Chris Christie here and have that conversation.
All right. Well, I will try. I've been speaking with William D. Cohen and Sarah Ellison from Vanity Fair about their reporting on the Trump children. Thanks so much for joining us today. There was so much we didn't get to, but pick up the magazine, go online, and read both of their stories.